Hi, my name is Dave Lenehan, and you're listening to Tribe of Speakers. Welcome to Tribe of Speakers, Episode 9. In mid-April, I began a brand new journey with the launch of the podcast, and over the past 7 weeks, I've had the pleasure of chatting with some great guests: David Nihil, Don Harris, Priscilla Morris, Anton Savage, Pat Dively, Danielle Nocon, Jerry Duffy, and Terry Prone. I hope those of you who have been with me on the journey since episode 1 have enjoyed it as much as I have. Before we jump into the episode today, I want to take the opportunity to thank all of my guests for their contributions to the podcast. I hope the value that each guest has provided over the past few months will continue to be shared in the months ahead. Today's episode is looking back on some of the best bits from the first 8 episodes of Tribe of Speakers, and there's just so much to take away. I've split the episode into 3 sections covering topics such as getting started, overcoming nerves and building confidence as a speaker, audience engagement and connection, storytelling and preparing for a speech, and the best advice for the beginner public speaker. Thanks sincerely to everyone who is listening today, and also to those who have been listeners to previous shows. For me, it means an awful lot to receive comments from people to say they're enjoying the podcast. My goal was and still is to share the information from the speakers with as many people as possible. If you're willing to do so, please consider sharing a link to the podcast with your network. For full details, search for Tribe of Speakers on iTunes or SoundCloud, or log on to the website tribeofspeakers.com. Also, a reminder to check out even more resources and content about public speaking and presentation skills on my blog, that's communicateyoublog.com. But without further ado, please enjoy Tribe of Speakers, the highlights episode from season 1. This first set of clips focuses on advice for getting started, overcoming nerves, and building confidence as a speaker. Pat Dively discusses why it's important to have confidence in your content and to see the initial phase of speaking as a learning process with improvements over time. Anton Savage describes the typical approach taken when rehearsing for the beginner Father of the Bride speech. And Priscilla Morris provides some control mechanisms to help overcome nerves.
A lot of people, their goal, and this was definitely me at the start, was my goal with public speaking was I want everyone in the room to like me. That's a big expectation to have on yourself, because reality is not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to connect with your content. Not everyone's going to connect with it at the time that you do it. Maybe a year from now, they'll understand what you were trying to say, or maybe in the past, maybe they're steps ahead of you in whatever it is. But you can only do your best, which sounds kind of cheesy or it sounds kind of basic, but that's the reality. Is you're not there to win everyone over. You're there to deliver the best to the best of your ability. So, you know, have confidence in your content, and you should be going out there with the impression of, I think if you're really scared when you're public speaking, it's because you're thinking too much about what the audience is going to think of you rather than thinking about what you can share with the audience. If you change the paradigm and you say, my goal here is to share something with the people in front of me, it'll get you out of your own head and it's giving you kind of a more of a giving approach rather than trying to take people's approval. You're trying to give them something. So that's one thing to consider, is don't be so hard on yourself. You can only do your best, and you should be happy with that. A second thing to think about is a quote that I heard recently that I've been quoting to everyone, is stop listening to yourself and start talking to yourself. So if we just sit back, and this is why people probably find meditation hard. If you just sit back, you've got all these crazy thoughts running through your head all the time. And oftentimes they're negative thoughts. So if you're sat there waiting to go up on stage for your first talk or one of your first talks, chances are you're going to have some negative thoughts come up about how you could mess up or what could go wrong. And we tend to listen to ourselves. And so we'll listen to whatever crazy thoughts come. And generally we latch on to the negative. So it's worth talking to yourself and just having affirmations. People sometimes think they're fluffy, but your affirmation could be, my goal today is to share a message. My goal today is to share a message. My goal today is to share a message. And it takes you out of that fearful mentality, and it just reminds you of what you're trying to do there. So that can be beneficial. And I suppose see it as a learning process. It's like anything. You know, you don't go to the gym for the first time and lift 200 kilos. you go in and you lift what you can, and then you leave and you recover and you come back and you get a little bit stronger, and every time you do it, so accept that there's going to be a bit of discomfort with it. That's normal. Use discomfort almost as a compass toward what you want, because you know when we're too comfortable, we don't grow. If you can be a little bit uncomfortable going into your talk, you can assess afterwards, how did it go, take a bit of feedback, improve a tiny bit, go again. That's how you become a different person over time.
Secondly, once you get them clear on what it is they're doing and fairly sure that it's going to be okay, a lot of that will fall away. So when you look at things like I actually have a guy this afternoon that I'm helping with a Father of the Bride speech. I have no doubt that his focus would be, oh, but you're okay, a lot of pressure on me, this has to be good, it's the daughter's wedding. Once you come round to the realization of, well, actually, it's all about her. As long as you say a couple of nice and complimentary things about her that are rooted in the personal experience of you as her dad, hard to go wrong. Nobody ever looks at the Father of the Bride speech and says, could have thrown in a few more gags. You know, they're not setting that high a bar.
Yeah.
So if you can strip away most of that, you can then get people to a position where they say, yeah, okay, I'll be nervous, but I'm not going to be that complete fallover crippled with nerves. After that, then, in terms of nerves, it is just a matter of what are the ways to control it. Maureen Potter is case in point. I mean, Maureen Potter threw up, I think, nearly every time before she went on stage, by her own description. One of the most successful actors in Irish history. Every time she went on stage, she threw up. Now, it's an extreme way of dealing with nerves,
yeah.
But there's a couple of small things you can do with it. Okay, look, here's how you get them out of the way. And the last one is, people tend to overestimate how visible their own nerves are. Do you know, so you'll hear a vibration in your voice and think, everybody can see that I'm coming apart at the seams. And it's one of the things where videoing people is handy, because you're able to play it back and they begin to realize, oh, my internal panic isn't as immediately evident as I thought it was.
Part of it is confidence. So part of it is practice. So, you know, practice makes perfect is a very good phrase to have in the head. That's why I always feel really sorry for people in business when they say, oh, I've been told I've got to do an important speech next week. You know, sometimes people don't realize that you need lots of lead up. You need the ability to be able to practice it as much as possible, because the more you practice, the easier it is to do it. But also there needs to be that sense of feeling comfortable in the situation. And you can control nerves as well by using your breath. So I think you probably heard the folk phrase, take a few deep breaths, dear, and you'll feel better. You'll feel, yes. And that's because it's true. Very often these sort of old wives' tales, as they used to be called, come from truth, from reality. And if we take big breaths, we oxygenate our body. And that oxygen makes us feel more comfortable. And it also, when we take deep breaths, we stop ourselves from panting for breath. Because when we get nervous, if you think about how the breath comes, it's in little short pants and it's very high in the chest. So we don't have any control over that. If you breathe deeply, it's like the core of the body is engaged. And that gives you a sort of strength, which you don't have when you're breathing very shallowly.
On now to the second set of clips, which touch on audience engagement and connection, storytelling and preparing for a speech. David Nihil talks about why you should always build personal stories into your content, no matter what the scenario, and why rubbish content delivered beautifully is still rubbish. Don Harris reiterates the importance of telling stories to make your presentation a success. Pat Dively notes that true connection is about being your true authentic self. And both Anton Savage and Terry Prone highlight the importance of focusing on who's in your audience as a first step when preparing for a speech.
If you get really into public speaking, like, why not at least try it, dip in and out of it? If you're doing Toastmasters regularly or you're joining one of these public speaking organizations, the thing is they tend to be an extremely friendly audience, whereas a stand-up comedy audience is anything but, or a live storytelling audience is kind of one step down from that, whereas they don't know you, they don't have to be nice to you, but they tend to be a very nice crowd with no expectation for laughter. So it's just about finding ways to test yourselves that, you know, maybe having people there that you know makes you even more nervous, like a work setting or a college setting, that can be nerve-wracking stuff sometimes. So it's just finding an opportunity to get there in front of total strangers where you're like, ah, if it goes terrible, who's gonna know? And I mean, Ireland's a small place, somebody probably will know at some stage, but you have less likely chance to it. But I would say just stick with the content you like talking about, like those five or six stories that if you get drunk at Christmas or at a Christmas party or with your family, the five or six stories that people go, oh, Jesus, tell that one again, will you? That was an amazing story. Just find a way to build those stories into your public speaking, no matter what the topic is about, no matter what. So a lot of people, sometimes when they're nervous public speakers, they focus on delivery. They focus on making eye contact and moving their hands around and just doing stuff that a lot of public speaking trainers focus on, sadly. But it just makes no difference. Like, rubbish content delivered beautifully is still rubbish. And you nearly weird people out even more when you're amazing at moving your hands and making eye contact, but the stuff you're saying is just boring rubbish. So, but if you're saying something that's a story that's true about your life and you connect it to your topic, then people tend to resonate with it a lot and you relax a bit and your delivery just becomes natural, what people would call conversational presenting, which is just having a conversation anyway.
There's so many good examples of that, of stories that resonate with people. So if you have good stories, that is what people will connect with. And they love stories. We are a nation of storytellers. We love stories from a very young age. As children, we absolutely love being told a story.
Mm.
So then as things go on, you realize the value of telling stories, because people react and they will say, that reminds me of something that happened to me. Because in their head, they're suddenly thinking of a story that was exactly the same story in a different place. And they are things that kind of enrich people. You flash back in your head to stories that happened a long time ago to you, and other people have stories. It's what happens in good conversation, really. It's all about stories. I'll never forget that time I was coming down Grafton Street and I met this gentleman. You know, It's a story. And the same thing with good or bad stories. Some of them can be really not nice experiences. Some of them can be hugely rewarding experiences as they apply to you. So where possible, use stories that you have been personally involved with. Don't use somebody else's stories.
I wouldn't say technique so much as just an honesty and a transparency. You're not up there trying to portray yourself to be anything that you're not. If you can really connect with who you are and be true to who you are, people recognize that. You know, sometimes you might see a speaker and they're up there and they're talking and they're saying all the right things, but it doesn't connect. You know, you can tell maybe they've read the stuff in a book that they're talking about, or they intellectually they understand it, but sometimes you don't connect. And I think if you're really honest and you bring, one of the things I'll do is bring stories and analogies from my own life or from my clients' lives into every lesson. So, you know, there's no point me talking about fear and giving a 5-step sequence to overcoming fear. The way I connect with an audience is I tell stories from my own life when I've been really scared and I've leaned into it, or clients that I've worked with have done the same. I think stories is one of the key ways you connect with an audience. I think honesty and transparency in who you are. I think not being afraid to show your weaknesses and where you struggled, that's where people connect. People don't want to hear you talking about all your successes, because, you know, we all learn more from our failures than we do our successes. So it's nice to share those things too. I do a lot of I suppose coming from a fitness background, my unique selling point in fitness was the community aspect of what I did. So I'd always get people connecting with one another. And I try to bring a bit of that into the presentation, in the sense that I'm not just going to talk for an hour. I'm going to talk for a couple of minutes, share an idea, and then ask the audience to maybe stand up and speak to someone they haven't met and share what they're taking from the conversation. Because otherwise people can be quite passive learning, sitting back and kind of waiting for something to fall on their lap. Whereas I like for people to challenge what I'm saying and think about how it applies to them.
Let me come at it a backwards way. I remember years ago, I asked a woman who was the best public speaker she had ever seen. And she talked about a chief executive who she had worked with in a large American multinational before. And I said, what was it that he did? And she said, oh, he was giving this keynote to the whole staff, and he cycled in at the start on a bicycle, parked the bicycle beside the stage, and then gave his talk. And I said, and what did he say? She said, oh, I have no idea. Now, if you want to achieve that, if you want to be memorable for here's tricks and out guff, that's relatively easy. The harder bit is, how do you construct something in a way that actually remains with people, that affects them, that stays in the head? It's hard, but it's relatively commonsensical. So first of all, the thing that most people get wrong when they do any kind of communication is they start focused on themselves.
Mm.
So you know, I'm going to walk into a room of 100 people. Oh, they'll all be looking at me. Oh my God, I hope this goes okay. I hope I don't dry up. I hope I don't do that. And it becomes entirely self-focused. The first thing is just that simple task of saying, what's their thinking? Where are they at? What's their set of expectations? What are the things that motivate them? Effectively, any audience listens with three things in mind. What's new about this? What's different about this? And why should I care?
Okay.
And your job is always to answer those. So if you can get somebody to start to think about their audience as a group of single individuals and get properly clear on what it is that they want and need and are interested in, and then root the presentation in that, you're not off to a bad start.
First of all, I would often have to say, no, don't go near the PowerPoint slides. If you really need PowerPoint slides, you can add them at the end, but that's not where you want to start. First thing that I'm saying to them is, tell me about your audience. Who are they? What do they know about your topic right now? What do you need them to remember and do differently after your talk is over? And you will find, and it astonishes me to this day, the number of people who don't, when they're preparing a speech or a presentation, think first of the people that it's being made to. They just pick up an old presentation or somebody else's presentation. Mm. No, you have to work out, okay, here they are, this is what they know, this is what they believe at the moment, this is what they do. Now, at the end of this, what difference do I want to have made? That decides, effectively, what goes into the presentation. It defines what is irrelevant. And then, when you've worked out the key things that you want people to find interesting, you have to say, well, why would they find them interesting?
Mm.
If you use what Macaulay called the big grey words of the lexicon, words like infrastructure and policy platform and regulatory compliance, oh dear God, everybody in the audience is going to resentfully go to sleep. You need people to illustrate what they're talking about. I'll give you an example. If you say, well, the history of medicine shows that the medical profession are singularly focused on mistaken beliefs, people are going to go, sorry, what? Because that's all conceptual language. If you say, for the guts of 200 years, the top guys, and they were all guys, in the medical profession all over the world, when somebody was sick, took blood out of them.
Mm.
And no matter what they were told about this, they kept taking blood out of them and the poor patients kept dying. If you explain it that way, there's some possibility that the people in the audience will visualize what they were doing, and as a result, it'll go into short-term memory And as a result, it may even go into long-term memory.
The final set of clips from Tribe of Speakers Season 1 focuses on Jerry Duffy's advice for opening a speech, David Nihil talking about the rehearsed spontaneity approach used by comics, Priscilla Morris on the importance of a strong speaking voice, Terry Prone on what makes a truly successful speech, and we end with some of the responses to my question on the best advice for the beginner public speaker.
The first 1% used to go something like this. It's really great to be here. I'm so grateful, and I want to thank John or Jackie for the opportunity to speak to you. And now it's great, and I hope you're having a great day, and I'm here to speak about three things. Now I will, that none of those words will come out of my mouth now. I would immediately, for example, there's many ways to open a presentation, but I might immediately go into a story. I might immediately ask a question. I might immediately make a statement. And I would be also very crafted in how I asked a question. So my tonality would be, you know, I was doing a talk earlier on today for 90 minutes in front of a group of final year students, and I didn't speak for 20 seconds. And the reason I didn't speak for 20 seconds was I knew some of them weren't quite present. Okay. And I knew sometimes not speaking is the most powerful way to bring an audience or get an audience connected to you. And so after 20 seconds, because it was such an unusual thing to do, I know for a fact everybody was paying attention. And whereas the old me might have just tempted in and try and win them over, but I've learned that there's different techniques that we can use to really connect instantly with an audience to the point that just 10 seconds in their heads, quietly they're saying, oh my gosh, this is different. And now it's up to me to hold them continually. But the first 1% is very, very important.
And I think that was one of the key things identified in the book, that comedians just do it all the time. They make something look spontaneous that a lot of time is very much anything but. And I think it's very underutilized in the world of speaking. People tend to ignore disruptions and distractions if they pour a bit of coffee on their shirt, or the AV equipment isn't working, or the projector's busted, or somebody's being a bit loud, or someone falls off a chair. Those are all opportunities for experienced speakers. Rehearsed spontaneity, basically. And it's just something that inexperienced speakers tend to ignore or get flustered by sometimes, or consciously are not looking for. And it's something that can make a huge difference.
Okay, the interesting thing here is science tells us that we are influenced in the main by how words are spoken rather than the words themselves. So when you're actually listening to some public speaking, you're listening to the words, but you're engaged by the manner in which they're delivered. And this is, it's sort of common sense, isn't it? If you think about the last time you sat in a conference or, you know, a seminar where there were a number of different speakers, all of those speakers are there because they have knowledge of their subject. They should be interesting, but some of them will be interesting and engaging, and some of them might not be so interesting. And the reason for that is the manner in which they deliver it. You know, do they use a voice in a way that makes you listen?
A sense which is the old actor's sense of I'm boring them, I've lost them, that subliminal sense of what is an audience doing and what must I do to keep them interested. And above all, the capacity to finish not on time but before time so that you don't bore the ass off them.
I'll go with the advice question to end, and it's one I ask at the end of every interview. So if you could give one piece of advice to anybody about to embark on that journey to better public speaking, what would that piece of advice be?
It would be welcome the terror. Manage the symptoms of the terror and know this, that 30 seconds or 45 seconds into your presentation or your speech, somebody in the audience will nod at you or smile at you or do the expression that says, oh, that's a good point. And once that one person has done that, you're on a roll.
I would say no one is you, and that is your power. You know, we can spend our life trying to be like other people and putting people on pedestals. And I obviously believe in taking inspiration and learning from other people. But your biggest power as a speaker is going to be you and your experience and your personality and your history and everything else. And I would say embrace that. We spend too much time sort of deciding what a public speaker should be like and focusing maybe too much on certain techniques or certain structure, whatever it is. All that stuff is valuable, but the most valuable thing you can bring to a stage is yourself. So I would say be you, try to lean into that transparency. And again, that's a scary thing. So maybe the first couple of talks, the slideshow and stuff like that might be the focus on your talk. But as you get more and more comfortable, try bring more of your own personality and your own true self to the stage, and people will really connect with that and appreciate that.
100%. Well, don't write off to comedians, but I would say start with your own story. So take those five stories that, and if you can't think of five, at least three that your family make you tell repeatedly, that your friends make you tell repeatedly, and make sure that anytime you ever have to speak publicly that you're telling at least one of those and linking it to whatever topic is, because you'll be just so much more comfortable at telling it. But yeah, just start with what you know as opposed to stuff you've memorized just for the sake of saying it.
Don't allow somebody transfer their fear to you. They may have a fear of speaking. You may not actually have quite the same fear. But if they start telling you how bad it is or how difficult it is, you may suddenly have their fear. If you have something to say, what's the worst that can happen? What is the worst that can happen if you want to say something? Providing you're not, and these are some rules here, providing you're not going to open yourself up to any sort of a legal difficulty, providing you keep it very much in the confines of what's acceptable in any talk, what is the worst that can happen?
Please take a moment to rate, review and subscribe to Tribe of Speakers on iTunes or wherever you consume your podcast material. For more information on today's episode, please log on to tribeofspeakers.com. If you have any feedback, be it good or bad, I'd love to hear from you. Please drop me an email to dave@davelenehan.com. You can also check me out on Twitter @dave_Lenehan. Until the next time, thank you for listening.